So before I talk about mothers and Mother's Day, something struck me. I was in St. Petersburg. Everybody knows St. Petersburg. A couple of weekends ago, or early in the morning, walking along the waterfront. Maybe many of you know what that's like. And so walking along, and there are benches along for people to sit. And there was really nobody around. I pass a bench, and I see on the ground chalk. So somebody had written something out. So I stopped. And this is what they wrote. I mean, I was very struck by it. So just imagine somebody, I'm imagining, whatever that's worth, so somebody sitting on a bench looking out at the beautiful water, the waterfront, right? And they write down in chalk, "What do I need right now for my mind to be at peace?" Right? Very interesting. I think we can all relate to that, right? So again, I mean, maybe this is somebody who goes around writing these things everywhere. I don't know, but it was, you know, this was the only one there, and you know, again, beautiful scene on the waterfront, everything's peaceful, and this person writes, "What do I need right now for my mind to be at peace?" You know, it was very poignant, you know, very striking, because you can see somebody's, you know, like many of us, you know, they're in a very beautiful place. They probably come there to, you know, just to be still and quiet and enjoy. And yet their mind, even though things around them are peaceful, right? Sitting quietly on a bench, beautiful situation, and yet their mind is not at peace. So I think that was a very, very direct question. So just why don't we all just stop a second, close your eyes. And how would you answer that question? So if somebody was sitting on a bench in a beautiful place, or at the beach looking out on the water, or, you know, in a park, beautiful nature. And as you're walking by, they stop you and say, "What do I need right now for my mind to be at peace?" What would you say to them? But not like, what would you say to them like, "That's good advice," but like, what could you say to them that could be helpful to them? For where they're at. Somebody says, "What do I need right now for my mind to be at peace?" So this is your, you know, this is our chance, right? To help them. Because maybe during a lot of their life, their mind's not at peace, but it seems very normal. Right? Seems very normal. But it's often when we get in these situations, such as meditating too, that we see in more stark relief that our mind is not at peace. Even when the external conditions are peaceful. Anybody want to take a stab at it? Yeah, okay, so, well, the short answers, okay? 1, 2, 3, okay. 1.
Relax and let go.
Relax and let go.
Acceptance.
Accept everything. I mean, maybe a little more than it. You'd say to them in a sentence, you'd say, accept.
Acceptance.
Accept everything, yeah. Right, yeah, just accept everything going on in this moment, yes?
Follow your breath.
Yes?
Mental discipline and focus.
Develop mental discipline and focus. Anybody online helping us out?
Somebody online also said acceptance, and another person says, "You are enough."
You are enough.
Yeah. And another person said, "Nothing."
Another person says, "Nothing."
And another person said, give them a hug.
What?
Another person says, give them a hug.
Give them a hug. That could get you in trouble, but go on. You got to be careful about that these days. You might want to give them a mental hug. That might be. Yes. Pay attention to now, yeah.
One person says, just be with what is.
Just be with what, just be with what is.
Be with what is.
Mm-hmm.
And another person says, forgiveness.
Forgiveness.
And another person says, stop thinking.
Stop thinking. Anyhow, you know. So again, I appreciate what you said, because, you know, there are those minutes in life, right? I mean, not just with us, but when we're with friends or something, when there's a little opening, you know, people, they're just living their life. It may be rewarding, it may not be rewarding, but, you know, there are those moments where all of a sudden they're open to looking at their life, right? And maybe they may ask you a question at some point. And, you know, what at that moment, how do you help somebody? Not easy. Not easy. Yeah, so, you know, in terms of Buddhism, Zen, we would say, what do I need right now for my mind to be at peace? We would say, nothing. Your mind is already at peace. Obvious question. Then why don't I experience it? Right, so that could not be a very helpful answer. But it's pointing. Yeah, so that's the real question. Right? Why don't I? Why isn't my mind at peace now? Which is a, you know, we spend a lot of time asking ourselves questions that really don't go anywhere. They're kind of circular. Circular kind of... But there are ways of questioning ourselves that open things up, you know. So I think that question, and again, I think it's often helpful to give people a question that gets them to reflect than giving them the answer, because they probably already know the answer intellectually. I should do this, I should do this, I should let go, I should accept. I mean, these are all good answers. There are answers, right? So I think asking them a question which gets them to reflect. So you might say, yeah, well, why isn't your, you know, friend, why isn't your mind at peace now? What do you think they might say? Beautiful morning, beautiful scene, they came out there to be peaceful. Well, how come your mind's not at peace, my friend? And they might say, we've all been there. For example, they may say what?
I'm stressed.
I'm afraid of something. I'm worried about money. I can't stop thinking about this. I can't stop thinking about that. Yeah, so... when somebody answers a question that way, they are basically now beginning to tell you where the problem is. And where's the problem? In their mind. Right? I can't be sitting on the bench and just enjoying peacefully the morning or enjoying my breath or whatever, because my mind is preoccupied. We all know what that's like. The mind is preoccupied. It's mulling something over. It's worried about something. It's thinking about something. It's there sitting on the bench, but it's thinking about what it's going to do next, or it's going over the past, or it's pulling out its worries, you know. Well, you know, whatever the worries are about the future, or anxieties, or they're going over, you know. All right? Yeah. So this is like using the Buddhist, you know, suffering, cause of suffering. Figure out the cause of suffering, get it out, suffering ends. So our minds are basically, as they are, peaceful. But what do? We keep stirring it up. How do we stir it up? Through our whole ways of misusing our mind. Why am I not at peace? Like you come up, you know, we come on a meditative morning like this in the hall at home. Any problems here? Look around. Any problems? Any issues? Any dramas that need to be resolved right now? Nothing. Right? In the same way, people at home and wherever we're sitting, listening, there's nothing going on. Everything's fine. You know, Thich Nhat Hanh has a wonderful thing where he said, you know, we have all, right now in this moment, we have all the conditions we need to be happy, to be peaceful. Right? Is that true? Yeah. And as we learned this morning in our meditation, all I need to calm myself is what? A body and a breath, if we're following that practice, right? That's all I need. If I'm willing to let go of the dramas which consume my mind, and that takes training, but it takes intention. You know, that's something I want to do. I want to have a peaceful mind. Then I have to let go of all the ways that I'm agitating. So the simplest thing is to kind of have a ground in your body breath, because it's always available. Right. Our senses are always available, and they're always in the present moment. So if you're sitting on the park bench or the waterfront bench, and you're just looking, listening, smelling, tasting, feeling, where are you? You're right here. And if our thinking mind is not allowed to roam about, but we've kind of trained it in being present to what's really going on, we will very naturally be what? At peace. At peace. It doesn't mean there aren't issues in life. Are there issues in life that we have to deal with? Everybody know what we're talking about? Yeah, there is. There, yeah, that's, you know, we're lay people. We have issues. Things are going on. But those are just things to what? To deal with. That's all. But they're not necessarily things to endlessly ruminate, obsess about. Especially in a way that's not useful or purposeful, which is, I think, what this person's talking about. They came down, I'm just imagining, they came down to the waterfront and sat on the bench because they wanted what? Peace. But they forgot that the source of their distress is in them. Right? So they're hoping that the external situation will make them peaceful. Can you see the problem with that? Now, it doesn't mean peaceful surroundings aren't beneficial, you know what I'm saying? But that's all they'll give us is just a temporariness. But the real thing is we're bringing along we're bringing along all our issues and all our dramas wherever we go. Even, you know, on a beautiful Saturday morning on the bench in the waterfront. So anyhow, this is, I was very moved by this little quote and what this person was asking, and I think it's a very meaningful question for all of us to ask ourselves. Do I really need something to have a peaceful, calm mind, or do I have to let go of something or some things to have a peaceful, calm mind? Again, in Buddhism, our minds are always in their essential nature, deep and pure and calm. The thoughts are the bubbles, the thoughts are the waves. You know the analogy of the waves in the ocean? You know, the ocean is vast and deep. The waves are the surface, and they blow about, right, by the wind. Right? Little wind, little ripples, big wind, big waves. But even in those kinds of weather, if you go down to any depth, peaceful, calm. Good analogy for our minds, same way. So as long as we're living on the surface, right? The thoughts, the dramas, that's where the waves are. But yet, the other aspects of our mind that we can begin to develop in meditation, not that hard, are always available to us. Just asking ourselves the question, when you find your mind is disturbed. You know, I think a very useful, simple thing is just to say, where am I right now? Just try it. Just close your eyes and imagine you're kind of lost in your favorite rumination. And all of a sudden you just ask yourself. In other words, we're lost in our thoughts. And all of a sudden, if you ask yourself, where am I right now? In reality, what's happening right now? You'd open your eyes, you'd look around, and you'd say, oh, this is where I am right now. Right? I got momentarily lost. You see? I got lost in an alternative reality, the reality that's created by my thoughts. Now, as I said earlier, our practice is not to stop our thoughts, but our practice is not to be endlessly swept away by our thoughts. So we can what? Enjoy life, enjoy presence, enjoy people, enjoy where we are, enjoy sitting on a park bench, on a Saturday morning on the waterfront, and just enjoying being there. How simple. So anyhow, I was moved by that. What do I need right now for my mind to be at peace? Good question. Now, as to the matter at hand, Mother's Day. So it's interesting, beginning to think this week, you know, we do these intensive practice periods in our community, and I believe this is the last week, and we have, I think, 3 intensives going on now, and we usually do a shorter one in the summer, and I thought, you know, what would be a good one? Good topic. And what popped in my mind was altruism, but not altruism as a conceptual thing, but altruism as something very personal, like really very personal intensive, helping people where they're at, become more altruistic, whatever that means to them. So that was my thought. And then I realized today was Mother's Day. Now, Americans, we have a problem. Around the idea of mothers. Right? Because on one hand, very traditionally, in all cultures, the mother was the metaphor, the symbol of what? Love. Selfless love. Is that not true? Right. Yeah. And I'll talk about how it plays out in Buddhism. So on the other hand, we have this almost, mothers as an ideal, mothers on the pedestal, right? The fountain of love and kindness and selflessness and support. Everybody know about that one? Right. Which is quite wonderful and very inspiring. I mean, it's very interesting in all the major world religions, right? Like in Christianity, who's the symbol of love and compassion and kindness is? What? Mary, right? A woman. Jesus' mother. In Buddhism, is Kuan Yin, Kanon, the Bodhisattva of compassion, is portrayed as a woman. Okay? And it's so you understand that. Now, and I'll talk about how this plays out in Buddhism. So we have this wondrous ideal of what it means to be a loving, selfless, totally altruistic, not thinking of oneself, only thinking of their children, right? Person, i.e. a mother, right? And then for many people, they have a reality of their experience of their mother, right? And for many of us, that experience of our mother is not as pure as the literature would have us believe. Right? So there is a dichotomy, and I've said this before, but when I first encountered teachings Asian teachers who would be teaching about compassion, and they talk about, you know, just their whole way was to talk about compassion, you know, motherhood, mother. And they were very shocked to find out that there were many of their Western students who went, no, my mother wasn't like that at all. You know, I mean, they were very shocked because that was so ingrained in their culture. That's how you teach it. So it was they had to modify their metaphors. But I think it's important, okay? I think it's important for us to have these ideals to motivate us that seem very real. Because many of the spiritual teachings, spiritual values that we seek to bring into our life can be very abstract, you know, or intellectual. And so to have an example that's living, like a mother, or, why do we have Buddhas up here? You know, why do we have a Buddha statue? And why do we talk about Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and enlightened beings? To inspire us. You know, why do we have deep respect and love for the great teachers that are alive and practicing? Because they are examples of the possibility of what it means to be a human being. Left to our own devices, many of us have a fairly low bar for what it means to be a human being, for the human heart, for the human mind, for even, you know, talking about, you know, what do I need right now to be at peace, right? I mean, many people would settle for just a little peace, just a little peace now and then, or a little less noise upstairs. Or just a little opportunity every now and then to have a little rest from the inner dialogue. But the idea of a peaceful mind all the time supporting one, or to believe that one could have a truly loving heart all the time, for many of us seems far beyond. Right? So that is why having a living example of somebody who can do that is very helpful to us. Right. So let's come back to mothers. Now, one of the unique things about human beings that we all share, no matter where we are, culture, whatever, we all are here because of what? This is very simple. Birth. What?
Birth.
And to give birth, we had to have a what? A mother. Now again, as a father, I want to acknowledge fathers play a role in all that. But yet, you know, for 9 months, the burden of bearing the child and all that means goes on within who? mothers. And so let's just think about our mother. So here we are, we're all adults, we're all grown up, we have a life, but we all started in the same place, which we forget. Where do we start? In our mother's womb. And for 9 months, her body nurtured us. Is that true? We would not be here if it wasn't for her nurturing of us. And do you think she was always comfortable and at ease during the 9 months of pregnancy? What? No. A lot of discomfort. A lot of discomfort, right? And yet, she endured it, didn't she? Right. Traditionally, childbirth was it a very delightful process? What? No. Actually, if you've ever been around traditionally, women going through the process of giving birth, you may hear her what? Screaming. Right. And yet what? And yet at the end of that whole process, and there can be complications in addition to, she looks at us, and I was fortunate to be there at the birth of my children. She looks at us, and there we are, what, slimy? You know what I mean? Very slimy, right? Still have this cord connected to us, right? And, you know, all kinds of stuff. And she looks at us as if what? How does she look at us? Lovingly, you know? Yeah, lovingly. Right? I mean, the, you know, all the pain and all the suffering of 9 months and the birth and really how unattractive we are. And if you've ever seen infants, a lot of infants are very unattractive. That's in my own opinion. And yet, the mother what? Looks at the child as if what? It's the most beautiful thing in the world, right? Most beautiful thing. I mean, it's quite something. You see, it's quite something what love can do for an ordinary human being. And remember, are all mothers highly developed practitioners of love and compassion and wisdom? No. Right? If anything, it could be the opposite in terms of their own causes and conditions. And yet, for many of them, they go through that process like a highly developed person, right? They endure all kinds of difficulties for somebody else. And when they see the final result, they think it's precious and wonderful, right? And beautiful. And again, some of us may be going, I don't say very attractive. But, you know, not in their eyes. It's very interesting. And then, traditionally, that's not the end of it, is it? The mother, again, I know fathers are much more involved these days, but the mother what? What is her job over these coming days, weeks, and months? To nurture, right? Take care of, protect, feed, wash, hold, right? All those things. Right? Is it always easy? Is it always easy? Comfortable? No. Right? Loss of sleep. You know, and not all babies are delightful, right? Some of them are a little colicky or demanding, and you know, right? You know what I'm saying? And yet, we do it. We do it. We respond. And we take care of, right? And we protect, and we want to keep safe. And any little thing that could be possibly wrong with that child could be cold, could be wet, could be hungry, could be needing this. The mother is very attentive to, right? Very tuned into, right? Selflessly. So you can see why, and we could go on and on and on, you know, I mean, because mothers don't usually, in most cases, desert us after the first 6 months or a year, right? They put up with us, right? They put up with us for years. And even though we often sometimes think, I didn't have the best of mothers, right? Could it be possible that we weren't the best of children? Could it be that we caused suffering to them, difficulty to them, challenges for them? See, we never think about that, do we? Yeah. So, again, I would say Mother's Day, mother's very powerful metaphor. That's very real. You know, it's not ideal, it's not theological, it's not spiritual. It's like, oh, real. We all know that. You know, there's a woman who lives across from us here. You know, I don't know, you know. She raised her kids. Now she's raising her grandkids. And her, and she's even another great-grandkid. And you know what? Love. Love. I mean, it's amazing. Just love. Right? Open heart. So, Mother's Day, altruism. Challenge for each of us is, how do I become a more selfless person? A person who thinks of others. A person's not always self-absorbed, self-concerned. Really wants to be there in a loving, compassionate. Mothers are so understanding, right? It was always quite interesting to me that traditionally, when their kids get in trouble or something, they always think they've fallen under the influence of one of those other kids. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? It's never their kid, right? Who's the influencer? It's those other kids, right? Because in their eyes, their child is what? Perfect. You know, you see, I mean, it's, if you think about it, it's kind of bizarre, but that's interesting, you see. You know, and loving parents extend understanding to their children, if it's all good, that they don't extend to anybody else, because they'll often say, well, you know, this happened, or that happened, or they're having a rough day, or they just, you know, this just happened. And, you know, so even the child's bad behavior, they will often bring understanding to, right? Patience to. When they don't extend it to anybody else easily. So in our practice is becoming a compassionate, loving human being, to develop that heart. Through meditation, insight, we develop wisdom. We develop understanding of how things really are. We develop skills through meditation to really develop our minds. But we are our mind, heart, mind, you know, and how we really function in the world, which really means in relationship, is a matter, we might, in our way, of the heart. So what is the ideal to inspire us? Well, in the Buddhist tradition, in the meditative tradition of developing compassion, it is essentially to mimic the heart of a mother. Right? Altruism, putting others' needs ahead of ourselves, thinking of the well-being of others more than we think about the well-being of ourselves. Accepting. People talked about accepting. A loving parent accepts their child, even the bad ones. Right? Because the mother will say what? What does a mother say? Even if the child's not doing right, maybe even out there doing wrong, the mother what? What?
He's still a good boy.
He's still a good boy. Or he's redeemable, you know what I mean? Society may go, bad, we should lock him up. Mother goes, what? No, he's a good boy. He's a good boy, he's a good heart. And she'll name all the good qualities. Isn't that interesting? So, in Buddhism, we say, a person is practicing this path, practicing the path of altruism, practices motherly love for all beings. So this is the great extension. Okay? We go from the particulars, a mother and her children, and all those qualities that naturally are present, right? And we extrapolate saying, well, what if I just incorporated all beings having that same connection to them? Now, traditionally in Buddhism, they believed in past lives. So they believed, oh, at some point, over thousands and millions of reincarnations, everybody might have been my mother, or I might have been everybody else's mother. So therefore, I have relationship. It's a very interesting practice, whether you buy into it or not, because it basically says, you know, I'm related to everybody. I have some relationship or have had some relationship. So therefore, for me not to acknowledge that, right, for me to be disinterested in them and not care about them would be the height. You know, they say, well, that's, in traditional the teachings, they say, well, that's like an animal, you know, like an animal, you know, a mother. And we know animals really can exhibit some wonderful behavior toward their children. You know, very nurturing, very protective, right? You know, you'll see little birds attacking big birds that are trying to get at their babies in the nest. I mean, you know, the instinct is often there, but yet, at a certain point in the animal kingdom, it's time to leave. Right, and they kick the child out of the nest, or they kick the foal away. It's time for you to be on your own, right? And then they, you know, might never acknowledge relationship again, if they're, you know. But so they say, if human beings did that to everyone, we'd just be like an animal. Right? So we can't desert each other. Because everybody has been my mother, or everybody is my child, or everybody I have a relationship, I can't desert them. If I don't desert them, that means I always have to be caring about their welfare. That's altruism. Right? And willing to care about people's welfare ahead of my own, like a mother. Not instead of my own, but, you know, does the mother need to take care of herself? Make sure she gets the best ability, gets good nutrition, gets some rest, gets some, yeah. But yet the primary focus is what? Taking care of the child. So in our tradition, we call it the Bodhisattva way of enlightenment, the way of love and compassion and wisdom, is we are always concerned about developing our capacity to be there, to love, to care for, to be non-judgmental, See, all these qualities, I want to be less critical, I want to be non-judgmental, I want to really be consistently there, I want to see people in a positive light. These are all things that a mother does naturally with ever opening a spiritual book. Right? Right? And hopefully, we have encountered, either in our own childhood or in our own motherhood or fatherhood or in our observation of others, even briefly, we have encountered that loving heart. Just close your eyes and ask yourself, have I ever encountered that? Did I encounter that? I mean, just begin. Did my mother, whatever her strengths or weaknesses were, did my mother bear me inside her body for 9 months? Did my mother give birth to me, even though it might have been painful? Was my mother there for me, even when it was uncomfortable or painful or difficult? Was she there for me? Did she do her best to nourish me and protect me? Yeah. And if you can't find that in your mother, have there been other people in your life, other relatives, grandmothers, grandfathers, you see, aunts, uncles? Just close your eyes. Have there been people in your life that loved you, cared about you, were there for you? And what did that feel like? What did that feel like to be in the presence of somebody who offered you that? Or when you remember the sacrifices your own mother made for you, what does that touch inside you? Again, because we have a culture that often we are more focused on what's wrong than what's right. The mistakes she made rather than the things she might have done to support us, to keep us alive. It shifts. And the shift is very deep inside, because many of us with our mothers, our fathers, you know, have a critical or negative kind of, it's developed that way. But when we think of it this way, it often softens that. And of course, the next step is, even if he or she was not capable of that motherly love toward me because of her causes and conditions, knowing how important that is, why don't I give that to her? Why don't I give that to her? Stop waiting or needing her to develop that motherly heart. Why can't I develop that toward her or him or them? Because we all have the capacity of doing that. She or they might not have the capacity of doing that. But we have the capacity of doing that. And this is whether, you know, our mother is alive or has died. Because we still may hold on in our heart barriers. So let's just take a moment. Each of us is different. But we all had a mother. Some of us may still have a mother. Some of us may not. Can we love her with that motherly heart that we so much would love her to give to us, but now we can give it to her? Because maybe she never had a good mother to nurture her. Can you feel what it's like when we step out of the drama of ourself? And our needs and our wants and our hurts and our disappointments and our expectations. And, you know, we call that the world of self, the world of delusion. Do we want to step out of that and see there is another way to be in this world, another way to relate to people? That feels better. Feels better. Being stuck in resentment or deficiency or all these kinds of things doesn't feel good, right? So just take a moment and think about your own relationships. And what if you stepped out of the drama of self and stepped into the heart, the loving, altruistic heart that we have, and we have exercised it, but we've exercised it in very particular situations for particular people. You see, we're very particular and how we open our heart. I had a great-great-grandfather who had 21 children. Wow. Two wives. You know, what's that like to love 21 children, take care of 21 children, you know? Think how hard those fathers and mothers had to work, right? Just to keep it going, you know, how much they had to sacrifice. Everybody alive, well, clothed, housed, fed, take care of them when they're sick. So again, please close your eyes and think about your life, your relationships. Let's not go out to the whole world yet. And everybody we meet and everybody we encounter, no matter what, That's a high bar, isn't it? But let's just think about our own circle. Family, friends. Am I present to them? Do I see them? Do I care about them? Like how they are? Do I want them to be happy? Do I want to help them if they suffer? Am I understanding of them, their causes and conditions, so I can be accepting of them? I mean, we can do wonderful altruistic meditations, reflections, send love out into the whole universe, and very wonderful when we do those things, but yet the pedal meets the metal. I mean, that's where it gets real. You know, just look around at all your relationships, closer ones, and then kind of begin to move out, you know. You may say, oh yeah, for my little circle, I'm very loving, very protective, very caring, very much selfless. But it only you know, extends only extends so far. You know, there's like an in club, and then the rest, everybody else is the out club. Right? But what if I took that down? What would that be like? And just kind of opened the whole thing up. Everybody's my child. Right? All sentient beings are my children. What would that be like? See if you could just practice it for a moment in your mind. What would that be like? You know, you don't have to do it. This is the wonderful thing about imagination. Right? Just seeing if we can even imagine, you know, if we can't imagine it, how could we ever do it? So just imagine, what would that be like? Kind of think about your circle and think about maybe, you know, could be a substantial circle, it could be a very tiny circle. You go, yeah, really, I am totally devoted to them. I love them. If they need me, I'm right there for them. I care about them. If they suffer, you know, and how many people are in that circle? Can you count it on one hand? Two hands? Two hands and a foot? you know, you understand what I'm saying? You know, and see how far it really extends if we're honest with ourselves. Again, there's no need for disclosure. Yeah. You know, what holds me back? See, what holds me back? Sort of like the person on the bench, you know. How come my mind isn't calm? Ask yourself, how come my heart isn't open? You know, the wonderful thing about young children, not in all cases, they tend to be very what? What? Well, come on, I'm focusing on the positive. But they tend to be very open. Right? I mean, you know, they'll smile at people, they smile at them, you know. Right? I mean, they do have their shortcomings, I agree. But, yeah, they're very, I mean, young children are very interesting. If they've been raised with love, is there very naturally what? What? Loving. Yeah, they like people, they trust people, you know. Yeah. Kind of interesting, you know. Somehow that's a kind of a natural thing. If they've been nurtured that way, if the seeds of love have been nurtured and trust have been nurtured in them, natural heart. Yeah. So. I ask myself, what gets in the way? Why can't I love this person? Why can't I care about this person? This neighbor, this colleague. They're just like me, everybody else. They want to be happy. They don't want to suffer. They want good things for themselves and their family, right? Just like me. Why can't I love them? Why can't I support that in them? These kind of questions that kind of peel things back and let us look at life more deeply are very helpful. You know, in past years, Thich Nhat Hanh, I think most people know who Thich Nhat Hanh is, you know, early on in his Buddhist life when he was still in Vietnam, he wrote this little book, A Rose for Your Pocket. In past Mother's Days, I've referred to that. Very short, very beautiful. By the way, he loved his mother. And he writes about her as if she was the ideal of motherhood. Yeah. And then I guess in Vietnam, there was no such day as Mother's Day. It was only when I think it was in Japan where he kind of, found out about the holiday, and he was very moved by it, and he recommended that they adopt it in Vietnam. They have filial piety. It's more Confucian, which is a different kind of thing than this kind of love. So he says something very interesting. He says, many of us, we've forgotten the preciousness of our mothers and what they've done for us. Or else, even if we're aware of it, our relationship with them has become more functional. How are you doing? What's going on? Especially if you have older parents, it's like, how many doctor's appointments have you been to this week? And what are your test results? And you know what I mean? It becomes very functional. Right? And he says, it's very, very touching. His recommendation is if your mother's still alive, next time you see her, speak to her. Say, Mother, there's something I want to tell you that maybe I haven't told you before. And if your mother says, what? You say, Mother, do you know that I love you? Very, very, very simple. Mother, do you know that I love you? Even if your mother has passed, we can still say that to her. Even if your mother has perhaps done things because of her own conditions that has caused, a disharmony in the relationship. To hear from another human being, do you know I love you? Can be very powerful and healing, couldn't it? Because oftentimes people, even though they may not show it, have shame and guilt and lots of stuff that they bury inside themselves because of the way things have unfolded in these relationships. And yet we have the power, each of us, to begin the process of healing these relationships. Right? And what better one than mother, father, sister, brother, husband, wife, friend, partner. What? Do you know I love you? Right? You know what I mean? We're very functional. But like that's the glue of relationship, isn't it? Love. And yet we have trouble just saying things like that, don't we? Sort of strange, but that's the way we are. So that was his recommendation at the end of his little essay. Next time you see your mother, next time you talk to your mother, just tell her, Mother, do you know I love you? Father, do you know I love you? In spite of everything. So to do that, we have to what? Go deeper. Deeper than the self, because the self always keeps score. Everybody know the self? Always keeps score? Yeah. You didn't do this, you did this. But self keeps score. But the heart, true heart, doesn't keep score. It understands. Accepts. So let me stop now. Maybe a few minutes. Any questions? Easier said than done. So any questions, anything come up and going, I don't know about this with teaching. Online, just raise your virtual hand. All right. Dee Dee and Brian are up there. You can chat it in. And anybody in the hall, there's a mic. So anybody have a question? I mean, don't be shy if you're new. I mean, this is, yes. In the hall? Just wait. We for people online, there's a microphone. Just wait. Yeah.
What if our unconditional motherly love somehow causes the sense of entitlement in our child, and by becoming this altruistic, giving yourself completely human being, you set up your own plank so high that anything behind that, anything beyond when you fall, is considered to be a failure or even a bad behavior.
So if I understand you, what if you've been a very loving, good mother, and therefore the child expects you to continue always to be that way?
That's correct.
And what happens if you're not always able to be that way?
That's correct.
So that's a challenge for the child, isn't it?
Yes.
And maybe you can help them, you know, because obviously when we are the parent of a younger child, we are that totally selfless, giving, altruistic, right? But over time, it changes, doesn't it? Right? Because we are trying to empower them to be more on their own, but also they're growing up and they may begin to see that we are not, right? Yeah. And if anybody's ever raised a teenager in this culture, you have often dealt with the fact that they may say not very nice things to you, right? Could be, right? Or, you know, be disappointed in you. But that's okay. You know. What could you say to them? Yeah, I still love you. I still want the best for you. That's altruism, right? I want the best for you. But I'm also a human being too. Oh, you know what I left out? Ourself, in terms of extending that loving heart to, that accepting compassion, we extend it to ourselves first. I mean, yeah. Children have to grow up. They begin to see us that we're human beings too. But that doesn't mean that they cannot be deeply appreciative of what you've done for them in the past. And understanding that, you know, there are reasons that that kind of mothering is no longer helpful to them. You know, so we know that, you know, why does the mother bird, you know, kick the baby bird out of the nest, and why does the mother deer, you know, kick the foal away at a certain point, you know, and have you ever seen, you know, the little calves, you know, trying to still suckle at their mother's breast, and the one kicks them away, you know, why are they doing that? Because they're mean and they hate them? Why are they doing that? Yeah, to help them grow up, you know, help them grow up. So that's love. Love is helping. Helping them grow, helping them develop. Yeah. But, you know, if you grow up in a culture where these ideas that I'm talking about here are in the culture, then I think it helps children go through those stages and still have that deep love and appreciation for all their mothers done for them. But we may have to do a little bit of education, you know, in our culture. But it's still a wonderful teaching. I mean, we can be very honest with our children, right? I'm not, you know, I understand. I'm not on a pedestal anymore. Yeah. It's okay. I'm a human being doing my best. Right? Always have done my best. Are there other questions?
We have one online.
Yes.
From Paul.
Yes.
He says, if your mom has died,
yes,
does it make sense to do metta or tonglen for her, or is there another way to practice?
Yeah, so again, if your mother has died, you know, these relationships live on in us, right? Because, you know, if I said, everybody just close your eyes and bring to mind an image of your mother, what do you feel? You know? So everybody just do that. Just bring to mind an image of your mother and just spontaneously, what is the feeling tone of your response when you see her? What? Okay, somebody says love. Anybody else have a different response?
Caution.
Anybody have a different response?
Mixed.
Yeah. Anybody else?
Gratitude.
Anybody else? Warmth. Yeah. So lots of different, you know, most people aren't responding, but I know, you know, it's a mixed bag, isn't it? Yeah. It's, younger mother. Yeah. So she said, so the image that came up with a younger mother. So that's a good place to begin. Because again, what we're trying to is you know, this wonderful feeling of gratitude. You know, this is a very profound spiritual, you know, we talk about acceptance. Gratitude helps us be accepting. You know. So to be grateful for all she did is a good beginning. And then as perhaps you said, as the years went on and the decades were on, it changed. But that still does not cancel out. You see, we have short memories in our culture. And we seem to, you know, not, and we don't see the whole picture. So, you know, we might have, I don't know, in your teens or your 20s, might have gotten into a thing with your mother, right? And all of a sudden it changed, or she changed, right? And so that's all you remember, you see, or that's where the relationship got stuck. And yet when we reflect in this way, which we have to kind of, see, these are actually, the teachings I gave you are actually meditations that we reflect on to help us get out of this more narrow view and to see the bigger picture. So we have gratitude, very healthy. You know, in Buddhism traditionally, to be born a human being and all the opportunities that affords us is very special, right? Very special. We couldn't have done that without her. No matter what life has given us up to now, because here we are now. Right? We were all here, we found a spiritual path, we know there's a way to heal and transform. That's all because our mothers gave birth to us, our mothers preserved our life, right? Took care of us at a time when we were totally dependent. Remember being an infant or a young child? Total dependence. We could not have survived without her or whoever was there for us in that, playing that role. And we forget that. See, we forget that. And we tend to focus on, you know, what happened afterwards and the conflicts or we began to see them in more human ways and realized they had some problems or defects, right? But that's all we focused on. And we forget. I owe my life to this person. I mean, who else do we owe our life to? I mean, if you think about all the various kinds of relationships we've had in our life, who else can I say, I owe my life to this person? Only our mother, well, our fathers, contributing. So it's a very special relationship, whatever it is. However it turned out, we would not be here if it wasn't for her. Anyhow, thank you for listening on this Mother's Day. Yeah, so in Buddhism we say, all beings have been my mother, or we talk about all motherly sentient beings, which means I feel like a mother to everyone. That's the heart, which we're trying to cultivate. So anyhow, in the altruism intensive, we'll kind of work on extending our circle, and also to include ourselves. Thank you, everyone.